Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
Welcome everyone to Brainstorm Brewery. We're here at episode 45, I believe. Is that correct?
I don't know. Yes, sir.
45? Yep, sounds about right.
The show notes, but the show notes were populated by Corbin, so they are not all that likely to be correct.
It actually feels like
that's the episode we're on.
It actually feels like episode 46 because we just had a podcast before we recorded this podcast.
It is true. We have been on now for what, hour and a half?
And like literally Marcel just asked a financial question. We talked about it for 2 minutes and now I'm like, oh my God, why aren't we recording this?
But don't let Jason fool you. I would like to pretend like that hour and a half before our podcast is us discussing very relevant financial news, but we usually try and save that for the cast, and it's about the least productive 2 hours of my week.
It's about Pokemon speedruns and
yes,
wishing my wife would die.
You know, that's a good idea. I have Pokemon Snap set up. I could do a speed run through that, record it, put it on YouTube. That would be fun.
A speed run of people... Pokemon Snap. Take
really?
All the pictures.
Actually, Pokemon Snap was pretty much the jam. I gotta give him that. Like, I was gonna make fun of him, but
no.
I enjoyed that game.
I never played Pokemon Snap because I was too busy, I don't know, having parents who loved me and bought me good games like Perfect Dark, I guess.
That's fine.
I have that game as well, but Pokemon Snap's a lot of fun.
I am the worst defender of this. I have to go with Corbin on this one, sadly. I remember playing it at my friend's house when I was little, because I didn't have an N64. I had a PlayStation, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever, that in Pokemon Stadium. So when I turned, like, 16 and acquired an N64 at an estate sale, I also had to go out and find a copy of Pokemon Stadium and Pokemon Snap at the ripe age of 16. So
I'm
fully willing to admit those things.
Yeah, I got my first N64 at, like, age 16 after been out for like 5 years.
I got it when it was new, and I got Diddy Kong Racing as my first game, and then Star Fox. So now I have like a real collection of N64. I have all the good N64 games. I'm proud of the collection.
I have gone back and acquired an N64. Actually, I have like three of them right now with a bunch of games. I don't ever play them. I sound like a video game collector because of how many consoles and stuff I have, but most of them just sit in the attic and I do nothing with.
The one game I never played was Zelda Ocarina of Time. That's
you're doing it wrong.
I know.
Was the best of them.
The best game, hands down, was GoldenEye. That's the best first-person shooter ever created.
No way, Perfect Dark. GoldenEye wasn't even the best game on the GoldenEye engine.
Perfect Dark was just so sporadic. All the levels were everywhere. It took forever to move around. I really did not like Perfect Dark at all.
There were two things that GoldenEye had that Perfect Dark did not. The first one is paintballs, and the second one is odd jump.
Perfect Dark did have paintballs, and it also had bots.
No, so odd job was a bitch. Friends, odd job was cheating.
No,
I know that's the point. Odd job was unfair because your gun would automatically shoot over his head. It was
there were like five characters in Perfect Dark that were the same size as odd job.
Oh, I see. You guys had auto aim. That shows your skill level on that. Okay.
Oh, listen to this, Marcel. Shit talk.
I think how we literally spent more time talking about financially relevant stuff that we didn't record, and now we're just talking about.
Oh,
Marcel, I'm bringing.
We're so bad at this. We've been doing this for 45 episodes now, and we haven't quite figured out how to start the cast in a timely manner.
Oh, wait. I know the next part. So we're supposed to do the pick of the week thing here.
Oh, no.
That's where we should probably start this.
I'm not even ready. We've only been talking about stuff for an hour and a half.
This is just some of the talk we have. If you want to listen to some of the crazy stuff that we did, check out episode 39, and you'll see here about a good 10 minutes of before the cast. And
yeah, that was like the best 10 minutes out of... like the best 10 consecutive minutes out of like 2 hours of that. And then we realized, oh God, we just did a whole podcast.
Basically. But so now, let's pull into the picks of the week. What you got?
I'm locked and loaded. Let's do this.
All right.
Serious podcast time.
Go, Jason.
Oh, can I go? I thought I was just interrupting Corbin.
You have permission to go, Jason.
All right. My pick of the week is, if you can, inexpensively, and I'm thinking like under $1.50, pick up as many Zendikar basics, the full art ones, as you can. Those are pretty cheap right now. I can't really see them staying around $1 for much longer. people actually, there are art on them that people prefer to the unglued and unhinged. Especially the foils. The foils are really cheap compared to, it's something like, what, $60 on an unhinged island? And there's only one available versus you can get four or five different styles of the Zendikar ones. The foils are a definite good pickup. Now, the foils will never be cheaper, but even the non-foils, everybody wants them. Some people like, I want all the John Avon Mountains for my cube. I need 75 of them or like something crazy like that. So you're going to have an easy time outing them, but just hold on to them for a few years. These are really going to go up and they'll never be cheaper. I was able to buy these for like a quarter piece at the shop like 6 months ago, and now people will come off them for less than a dollar. So even in people's minds, these cards have gone up a lot in the past 6 months. So I would definitely just hoard them.
Yeah, and that's one of those things, you know, we always talk about the box in the closet. I literally have a giant box in my closet of Zendikar lands, and I always pick up the foils. And yeah, like Jason's saying, in the last 6 months, I know the foil lands have gone up where the non-blue ones were 6 to 8, the blue ones were 8 to 10. Well, now it's more like 8 to 10 for the non-blue ones and 10 to 12 for the islands, or even a little higher. So, they're definitely gonna, you're running out of time to get them cheap, I think.
These are the unhinged lands?
Zendikar lands.
How much are the unhinged? I got a bunch of unhinged packs I want to open up.
They're between
four,
like
five
to eight on the non-foils, and then the foils are insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially and I mean, there's a lot of random cards in that set too that are worth quite a bit of money. But if you have sealed packs or a box, you can actually like buy lists at a lot of times for more than what you're going to open out of it.
Yeah. You don't want to open those. You would just want to sell them sealed.
Oh yeah, I got it. Like
because a lot of the
whole set's nuts though. Like there are just so many $5 cards in unhinged. It's crazy.
Well, the thing is, like those have kind of a nostalgic value to sealed product more so than other sets, just because you like drafting unhinged or unglued is just a far different experience than drafting, you know, a regular set. So the individual cards are worth money, but people want the sealed product so much more because they want to be able to run an unhinged draft with their friends.
I bought these boxes for like $50. I think they're like 40 or 50 bucks, and I should have bought more. And this is remnants of whatever I had.
The first spec I ever did, like the first thing I did purely for financial reasons, was I was buying sealed boxes of unhinged on eBay for like $45 back in like 2005. And I was just, you know, busting them open, and like the lands were like a buck each, so you broke even on the non-foil lands in each pack. And like I just kind of threw all the other stuff in a shoebox, like all the rares and stuff like that from the set. And I went back through, and a lot of those cards are $5-6. So like that's the gift that keeps on giving. And anytime you busted a foil land back there, like those were like $5 or $6 at the time, and I was certainly happy to get that when I was paying about $1 a booster.
That's fair. Yeah. Well, while we're on the subject of long-term pickups and such, that actually ties right into mine. I think that thinking about after Modern season just happened here, and this is not something I encourage you to do right now. I would wait till Modern Masters comes out because obviously cards are going to be reprinted. But I think now is a good time to get into Modern foils. Like the format is going to be around. There's a lot of foils right now that are you can a lot of times find for nearly the price of the non-foil if it spikes. Like Fulminator Mage for a while was like $13-14 for the foils, while the non-foils were like already up to 11 or 12. That was just price discrepancy. I think that the format is obviously going to stick around as a PTQ format. It was a very successful season this time around. Nobody really bitched. I mean, people still sometimes dislike the format, but anything less than Legacy, I think people are going to complain. And I think that, like I said, the format's going to stick around. And anytime you have a format that's going to be eternal like that and isn't going to rotate, the foils are very safe pickups.
So yeah. People's favorite thing to do is pimp out their modern deck.
Well, maybe not.
Seeing it a lot more this year than I was last year. Exactly. Like, it's something like the first year it was around, or even the second year it was around, people are really kind of unsure, is this going to stick around? You know, they just knocked off, extended, they could do the same thing to this format if it doesn't take off. Nobody wants to pimp out a deck that's going to be bad in 2 years. But if you have a deck that you're going to consistently be able to play, or if the very least staples that you're always going to play, even if it's not the whole deck, like, you know, picking up foil Thalias and stuff like that. Like, I don't think that's a terrible pickup in general.
I don't think Thalia is a modern card. Now, are you advocating picking up stuff that has EDH appeal, Legacy appeal, like some sort of cross-format appeal so, like, you're not totally stuck holding the cards at the meta shifts?
I think that's obviously the safest route to go about it, but I don't have any problem picking up things that are just modern.
What's
playable.
A modern-only card? Something like Birthing Pod?
Yes.
Yeah, like, I think Birthing Pod is probably fine. Like, you see what happens, like, yeah, there's cards, like, I want to say the Eldrazi, but obviously those are, like, have cross appeal too. I mean, a lot of these cards are going to be Legacy playable cards. Some of them may only be fringe playable in Legacy and see a lot more play in Modern, so maybe the foil wasn't that expensive before, considering it was, you know, just something that you maybe ran as a one or two of in the sideboard and now it becomes a four of in Modern.
So, here's a question, Ryan. Do you think, I understand you're saying now the Modern season just ended. Do you think people should actually pick them up right now, or are you saying?
No. That's why I said wait. I wouldn't, just to be safe with Modern Masters, because, like, you don't want to go pick up a foil Kitchen Finks, even if you can get a good deal on it, because it's more than likely going to be reprinted Modern Masters. I would wait until the set's fully spoiled. You know what's going to happen. A lot of your Modern cards are just going to tank in price anyway, just with the speculation happening up to that. And even if those cards aren't reprinted, if they tanked, they're not going to pick back up immediately. If somebody sees, Dark Confidant for some reason isn't in Modern Masters, but it's dropped down to 35, it doesn't mean it's going to be 70 the next day.
Right.
I think there are going to be two waves of sell-offs of the Modern stuff. There's going to be the people selling pretty early that, you know, think they're ahead of the game. And then I think the stuff's going to start to tank and people are going to start to panic and they're going to want to sell off, you know, when they see stuff's going down. I think want to wait. Just be absolutely patient if you're looking to pick up Modern stuff.
Yeah,
because maybe it's a pick of the week. I just don't think the week is this week.
Correct. Right. That was what I started this off with. I was saying, don't do it until Modern Masters comes out. Don't do it until you're absolutely positive that, you know, Modern, and you can check the MTGO metagame. It's not like you have to wait until the next PTQ season to know, you know, what in the world is getting played and what cards are still good and what cards have changed since the last season. You're going to have access to this information and just pick the safe cards. And yeah, like you said, going between cards that are Legacy playable, Modern playable, and EDH playable is obviously a very safe way to do it.
Yeah. And, I'll go into my pick of the week, which will be just harming the same tune that you guys were talking about last week. PTQ season is over. Modern, is now over. And I completely forgot I had a bunch of Modern cards on Moto, and I sold, pretty much everything I had. And I was asking you guys about the question, you know, earlier before the cast started, was should I sell my Thought Seasons? Those were one of the holds I still have, along with the Shackles, but I pretty much sold everything else. And, on Moto, at least, they still have a price memory, and a lot of the prices are still going to be there, but Moto's going to get hit harder than anything else for Modern Masters, because none of the cards are redeemable. So you're going to have a lot of drafters, you know, hitting Modern Masters, and a lot of cards that will be in Modern Masters. So anything from Alara Reborn for will be very subject to the price drops. So make sure you get out of your cards now. I mean, Modern still has another 3 months. It's going to be June 7th that we're going to get Modern Masters. We'll skip previews maybe about 3 weeks before that. So you won't see some of the absolute price drops until then. But people, you should get out now before people get scared, unless you really want to play a deck in Modern. Just get out your cards now before you see them in about 6 months and wonder what the hell did you have.
Yeah, and I'll round this out here. And I'm kind of touching on some stuff we talked about before, in the line of casual stuff, but I'm going to say pick up Command Towers. They've been steadily going up on TCG Player, and pretty much everywhere. The price has basically doubled on these in the last 2 to 3 months. And Command Towers, one of those, it's got printed a lot. There's a couple printings of it, I suppose is the best way to put it. And it's one of those, basically everyone who has an EDH check needs. And we talked last week about how, or maybe the week before, about how the price on all these casual cards, like, you know, the Primordial Hydras of the world, or the Battle Grace Angels, the Caged Suns, like, all of those kind of casual EDH cards, the price has just been going up and up, and Command Tower is right there with them, and I think they'll reprint this fair amount, but I don't think the price on this really can go down that far, because it's just one of those that people are always going to be able to have one of their EDH deck, and they're probably always going to want it, so that's...
Yeah, I was really bummed out when they printed the foil one, because for a while there, Ryan and I were talking and saying, if you knew somebody that did good alters, like altering a Command Tower would be like the only way to get that pimp for people's EDH deck, because there was no foil Command Tower for the longest time. So I was actually, picking them up, trying to see if I can get someone that did alters people wanted, and before that even got off the ground, they went ahead and put it in Commander's Arsenal, so it was foil for people that wanted that, but that's actually still not a bad target, so I'm actually still picking up Command Towers, because not everybody likes foils, and not everybody wants to foil out their whole EDH deck. So if people want to, like, sort of budget pimp by either having stuff get altered or have stuff in a foreign language, having Command Towers that can be altered more easily than the foils is not a bad place to be, if you ask me.
Not that we advocate pimping on this show.
Yeah, I actually wrote an article today. I don't like using the verb pimp because I don't really like exhibit, and I think if you pimp your deck out, that means you charge somebody money to let them play it at a tournament for the day. But I don't know. Exhibit kind of ruined the word pimp for everybody. What would you call it if you don't want to say pimp? Optimize?
I couldn't think of a better name.
Foil out? Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, the pimp is probably the best thing.
Though, so.
Make it flashy. Oh. That's really that's a loud dick there. I don't know.
It's so loud.
That's Marcel's white guy voice. That was pretty good. Hello, sir. That's a loud deck you've got there.
Hey, now.
Hey, I'm a white guy.
I tried to use a thesaurus for us just now, and pimp is not a verb.
Good to know.
The internet has no help for us. All right, so let's...
Thanks for nothing, Webster. All
right, we're going to try this out. What if we just type other words for pimp into Google?
Well, we will successfully derail the podcast, so we got that going for us.
We'll continue. All right,
let's talk about something that will impact stuff a year from now, and that's the fourth Pro Tour coming back. And, you know, everyone, we talked about it before, everyone gets really excited that, you know, there's another Pro Tour, this is a great sign for Magic, blah, blah, blah. All of that's true. There's another PTQ season because of this, and it's going to be sealed, which means it's a different set, because usually it's a large fall set that's in sealed season. And that equates to a lot of additional packs being opened. Now I believe it's going to be core set for an additional sealed season. So, you know, before we've kind of seen core set cards because it's opened a little less than expansions, settle at a higher price. I mean, do we think this is going to lower prices on core set cards? You know, what's this extra PTQ season going to do?
Core set. Like no one plays, even if it's the season, like nobody likes to play core set sealed at their shop. So. Right. It's pretty much just going to be at those events, so I don't think that's going to have a huge effect on it. Like, as soon as people can stop drafting core set, they absolutely will. That's experience. So I don't think having an extra PTQ season is going to have a huge effect on it, especially since core set, like, historically gets opened the least.
Right. Well, that's the point, right?
You're still, look at Thragtusk. People were still busting packs just to try to get that, and it did have an effect on the price. They needed to put it in those dual decks to bring the price of Thragtusk down. So if there's anything that's really good, I don't think extra opening in the form of a few PTQ events and like maybe one Pro Tour for, you know, core set sealed is going to matter all that much. I think the only thing that can really affect it is, you know, multiple printings outside the core set of those big cards. So if there's, it might bring the $5 cards to $4, but it's not going to bring a $25 card to $15.
See, I don't know. I mean, it seems like, if you take a format that people want to play, say Return to Ravnica, so if they're opening more of it, then having a sealed PTQ season represents a smaller percentage of packs opened in addition to what already is, right? So then if you take a set like a core set that nobody's opening because they don't want to draft it, and you make them open six packs of it for a sealed season, that seems like it would add a higher percentage than it would in the fall. And I think it's kind of the core set tax in that nobody opens it, so you have like $15 Phantasmal Images instead of $10 Phantasmal ones.
But people still bust sealed product. Like, it doesn't matter. People will still bust as much sealed product. Like, the pre-orders will be just as much as they will for any other set. You know, the people like at your Troll and Toad level and your Cool Stuff Inc. level, they're going to bust as many boxes as they would have anyway. And so the people that get their singles from stores, there's going to be the same number. Like, it's going to take a really long time for the PTQ season to have an effect on prices. So I think initially when the critical, like, first month, the PTQ can't have an effect on prices. And the stuff will taper off and go down long-term anyway, along with opening. So maybe the stuff will resemble a set like RTR more than a core set, but it's not going to have a huge, like, unforeseen effect on it. Right. I think it's going to be just a little bit more predictable and a little bit more in line with a non-core set that's opened a lot. So,
I mean, theoretically, that means you don't have $25 rares like Thragtusk.
Well, Thragtusk, I think, is a special case because people are opening record amounts of Gatecrash and there's still $25 rares in there.
What?
I just don't think it's been, but like Redemption and stuff hasn't had a chance to affect the price.
Yeah, I mean, Boros Reckoner is down to $18 on TCG Player. Like, it's come down. Like, no rare from a non-core set can hold $25 is what we're seeing with Boros Reckoner.
That's not true. I mean, you still have Snapcaster holding 25.
Yeah, and then you have Mythics.
I mean, Cavern holding is like 25.
Standard only cards is the proper thing to say there, I suppose.
Well,
fair. Reckoner. There's nothing to say Reckoner won't see play in Modern and such. But I understand what you're saying.
It's not right now. So, like, that's my baseline, basically, is you look at like, you know, we just talk about using past examples to set precedents on cards. Like, we saw with Thragtusk, that it's very difficult for a rare to hold $25. And I think being in a core set helped it be 25 for a while until they lowered it with the dual decks. And I think we see with Snapcaster that even if it's played, like $25 to $30 is kind of the max if it's in multiple formats. So if it's standard only like Reckoner, 25 is overpriced, and that's why it's come down, even though it's still getting played a lot. So, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at on it. I think I do agree that in that first month, the PDQ season won't have a huge effect. It'll be maybe like a year down the road. It, you know, at some point it does equate to, you know, thousands of extra copies on the market. It may just kind of hold prices down a year later, maybe than that first month.
Who can even say? Because we don't really have a non-mythic rare from a set before Thragtusk that we can even point at. Because what right. was like the stuff that mattered before was like the Titans and stuff like that. Like it was all mythics.
Yeah, I mean, Phantasmal Image I think was probably the most expensive.
Yeah, that's probably yeah,
15.
Yeah,
15 that, when it was like ubiquitous, like when it was a removal spell.
Right.
I mean, it was plus, but that almost doesn't count because that was getting like legacy play at that point too.
Yeah.
It's just hard. Noble Hierarch. So I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, Noble Hierarch. But even that wasn't as expensive.
No, it was like 20,
I think.
That wasn't in a core set. What are we talking about here?
No, we're just talking about non-core set rares like, that haven't that have broke that pinnacle.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it's like if I see any rare in a set at 25, I'm pretty much gonna sell. Basically, is kind of the way.
Oh, yeah.
Except in like very select cases that you can see coming, like Cavern. Like we knew when Cavern was spoiled, it was gonna hold that price because
they have to be eternal playable, or they have to be playable in every deck in the format.
Right. So. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, that's kind of how, I guess, we'll see if it may affect it a little. We don't think it'll tank the prices, maybe, you know, 10, 15%.
So are you certain it's going to be M13s or M whatever sealed? Or do you think it might be a different format?
I was told it was M14 sealed.
By whom?
Some guys I podcasted with the other day. They said, I hadn't seen the announcement. That's what they told me.
Well, let's look up this announcement before we're like, spreading misinformation, because I was under the impression they were bringing block back, which I would totally approve of. It makes sense for them financially as well.
Why not a team format? Like
they tried do that for.
They're not going to have it.
Yeah, you can't. You
sure you can't.
You have to have a team PTQ every year then.
That would be fine. I would love a two-headed giant or team sealed PTQ. Everybody would love that. That would be.
I agree, but it's terrible for logistics. Like
yeah.
That's a pipe dream.
And you're also flying twice as many people out. Like, it's expensive for them, too.
No, they just invite fewer teams. They invite the... Yeah, that's true. If you're... Yeah, first place is two people. I got you.
Yeah.
I was thinking prizing out top four instead of top eight like they did.
Yeah, no.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think...
Still blue envelopes involved, so...
Yep. It's twice as many flights.
The point of this is it's going to be interesting. There will be things to learn from the fourth PTQ season, whatever. You know, we sit here prognosticate about it, but we don't really know. I mean, we'll find out. So
who's saying what they do the first year will be what they do every year, too? It's basically gives them a gravy spot to mess around with, and, you know, they'll get feedback from people, and they'll figure it out. Like, ultimately, they're in the business of giving us the events we want to play in, because then we'll give them our money. So I can't imagine they're going to do something really unpopular and then be like, well, this was super unpopular. Let's keep doing it. So.
Right.
It's true. I mean, I think there will be another team pro tour at some point. I don't think that it's going to necessarily be this year, but I think we'll see it again.
So, I mean, what do you guys feel about like the changes in modern play? You guys, have you read like the articles from Brian Kibler and LSV talking about is just, you know, becoming harder and harder to become a pro player? And actually, you know, being on the grind, do you think that's going to affect Magic? Do you think that's part of some of Hasbro taking back more? Now that Magic is making a lot more money than it used to, but we're not getting the same output in terms of prize support, in terms of PTs, and all this other stuff?
I really think at the end of the day, what people fail to realize is we're not what keeps Wizards afloat financially. We are...
Right.
You know, when I say we are, I mean the competitive community in general. We're not the crowd that they are looking to ultimately please. It's mostly the casual crowd, because that's where they get most of their money. This community is here to give people, it's the same reason people watch basketball. Like, not necessarily living through those people, but it's like, it's an enjoyable thing to watch, it's competitive, and it's something you care about. And that's really like what the Pro Tour is for people. Like, there's going to be quite a few people who watch the Pro Tour who will never be there. And they know they'll never be there. And those are the people that are buying most of the cards. So, I mean, I don't know that necessarily that keeping the competitive players, like, super happy is that important to them. But I think that it does matter somewhat as far as, like, the actual morale of the game. I think if you lose the competitive community, the game does go down. But we are not what makes them their money.
I mean, it's the balancing act because, like exactly what Ryan said, we're not the ones filling, you know, buying all those boxes of Avacyn Restored because we want Angels. And that was a hugely selling set because of that. And that wasn't to the competitive crowd. You know, the Pro Tour is a marketing event. That's all it is. And it keeps a lot of people playing. But that's not the bottom line, really. It's part of the bottom line, but it's not the bottom line as far as sales go. So they have to balance the general health of the game with pleasing those people, and it's just a matter of how much money there is to allocate towards that.
So you're saying that the Pro Tour is like the pipe dream, is what, you know, keep the casual players going.
Exactly.
Yeah. Look at the number of people who attend and or watch a Pro Tour, and it's so minuscule compared to the amount of people who actually play Magic.
So, but
knowing that there's that competitive crowd and that competitive community is what keeps the game in the forefront and lets you stay in the public eye. Right. Like, those are the people who are getting new people into the game, even if they're just casual or whatnot. Like,
exactly. Like, it generates the
headlines. It's the face of the game.
Okay, so they're the face of the game, but now you have Brian Kibler, a major face of the game, LSV, a major face of the game, saying it's no longer profitable for them, that they gotta, you know, have their own job going on so that they can support themselves growing up as into men doing, you know, responsibilities and whatnot.
I think that's good.
Do you think that?
I think that's good because that keeps the game alive, because this is not a sport where, you know, every once in a while, yeah, you want to see John Finkel come back, but I don't want to watch LSV win, you know, a Pro Tour a year for the next 20 years. I want to see new blood. I want to see new names come into the game. And I think it's a great game while you're a college student or while you're a high school kid to make some money on, be able to travel. Like, if you're good at it, you know, you can actually make a semi-living off of it until you get your degree, until you move into the real world. Like, I don't think they intend people to live off of this game. And if that is your intended goal, a lot of times you're going to get into some sort of gaming company, or you're going to go work for, you know, one of the major vendors or something like that. Like, if you're that deep into the game, there are jobs that can still allow you to be, you know, a competitive player and at the same time be a writer or something like that to sustain yourself.
Yeah,
In order to
be the Magic pro who makes his living off Magic, you don't do it with tournament winnings alone. You do it with, you know, writing and all that sort of stuff. So it's all kind of a thing. Now, maybe that doesn't mean there aren't changes maybe that can be made with the structure. I mean, if a pro is going to a 1,000-person GP, you know, their odds of, you know, making money and making this a viable career choice are a lot higher than if it's a 2,500 person GP. And so, like, I do think there are things to be looked into there. And I think Wizards wants for a small number of people to be able to make their living playing the game, like, and or writing about the game, but it's a small group of people. So they just have to find what's too far, what's allowable in terms of just making that viable, but not easy.
Okay. Fair points to make. So moving on, you guys want to talk about the letters we got from some listeners?
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
I love listener comments or feedback.
Yes, please. So if you are listening to the show and you're not emailing us, please do. That's the downside to our cast. I guess the financial crowd, they don't like the feedback. So you give feedback, you will be probably most likely mentioned on the show. So let it pour in.
We didn't play that only one person a week sends us an email.
We got two this week. Two emails this week.
We got hundreds of emails, and we scoured through them for the best one.
And we picked two.
I would say that we probably got 10 emails this week.
We are the gods of MTG Finance, and everyone wants our opinion.
Because we're always right. We never make bad picks, ever.
No, we got literally two total emails.
We got like 10 emails. Let's not lie. We got like 10 emails, and we can only actually read two of them on the air.
Yeah. All right, I'll recap this one here from @TobisAndries. MTG on TOBIS.
His name is Alex von Hooklum.
I was given his Twitter name.
Follow this. So if he gets like 100 new followers, it'd be hilarious.
Well, he compliments the show, so thank you, Alex. We appreciate that. He also has a question, and he asks if it's possible to market could start getting saturated with new buyers and sellers. He says that in, you know, kind of in his experience, there's a lot of new people getting into the market with TCG Player and eBay making it easier for people to get in and sell their own cards. Is there a downside to all these new people getting into the market?
Short answer is no. Long answer is no.
Well, let me ask you this, though. I remember at Gen Con, you said it was kind of miserable for trading because there's so many grinders there.
Trading is dead.
Trading. That's trading. It's not like buying and selling. It's not being in the market. You know, there's people, TCG players getting new people all the time. They're allowing just, you know, any rando to sell in there. And that's still not ruining it because, like, anybody that wants to can sell cards on eBay. Like, you talk to people at the shop, and if you, like, offer them cash for a card that's a little lower than they want to take, they're like, well, I'll just sell it on eBay. Like, millions of people have eBay accounts. So is that ruining the price of Magic cards? Not really. When a Hellrider is $650 on eBay this week and it's like $18 on Star City, it hasn't done anything to anybody's prices. So I think people getting in the market of buying and selling, the only thing that does is if there's a spec, good or bad, that gets publicly announced, people will pounce. And instead of like one guy buying 20 copies, it's 20 guys buying 20 copies. And all of a sudden, 400 copies are gone and the price goes up a little faster. You know, stuff gets multiplied a little bit more than it would have if there were fewer people doing it, but that, you know, that those people still have to out those copies, and like after getting stuck holding onto a bunch of cards they overpaid on, they're not going to do it anymore. So I don't think it's going to be a long-term problem.
And this is something I talked about the other day. The podcast, actually, Twincast, run by Sam Davis, Boy Hero, and Cameron Cox on Twitter, had me on and asked me a lot of these questions. And we talked about TCG Player a lot, allowing individual sellers. And they were talking to me about the same thing, about these people buying out cards. And I say, if there's 20 people buying 20 copies each of these newer cards, you know, something that's in standard, maybe the price jumps initially, but then all those people, like, they have to go to sell. And if they're going back to TCG Player to sell, it's bringing those prices down. They're going to eBay. They're bringing the prices down. So even if people are spiking the price initially, it just keeps getting lower and lower. And I think it actually...
It takes less than a week to go back down.
Yeah.
Because those people are all in their TCG Player accounts. They're like, well, this guy's selling for $250. Why don't I sell mine for $240 and try to get out of them? And it's just a race to the bottom. It takes less than a week and the price is right back down.
Right. Now, the point where you have some problems is with the older cards, where there actually is a finite number of copies, and that's how you get stuff like Shallow Grave, you know, going up 1,000%, because when people rush it like that, there's just so few copies available. It can cause issues. But with newer cards, I don't think it does. So I don't think the influx of new people into the market is a bad thing. I don't think the negative impact is huge.
I think from a player's perspective, too, it's great because – It makes the game cheaper to play. Like, if you're smart about it and you go on to places like eBay and TCG Player rather than going to, some of the major retailers. Or, you know, like, sometimes the major retailers actually have them cheaper than some of the auction sites, depending on the card. It's very strange. Like, I've seen cards before on eBay that are, you know, $4 or $5 over what they're selling retail while people have them in stock.
Vexing devil.
Yeah, like, you really have to actually look around when you buy cards. The best deal isn't always on an auction site. Sometimes people just know that this card sells for $8, even though it sells $6 retail on like a dozen other sites.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, you know, on eBay, it's selling out at $10.
For instance,
the retail price doesn't go up.
Cool Stuff has Darksteel Plate in it at $4. And on TCG Player, Darksteel Plate's over $5 now. It's kind of been going up and people just kind of keep jumping on it. You just have to do your homework, I guess, is what we're saying. Because whether it's retail or auction, the good prices are out there. You just have to do your homework to find them.
Yep. Yeah. I will say there are several times that Cool Stuff has been like near what I want to pay buy list on some cards.
Yeah.
So just look around. Just have some sites bookmarked. Go to all kinds of different places and don't rely on one place.
Yeah, absolutely.
The only problem with more people getting into it is if more people are trying to value trade and they don't know how to do it with any sort of finesse, they can, in fact, sort of poison the well for everybody. And,
yeah, they turn people off to trade.
Because basically, one person has a bad experience with a value trader who basically is trying to rip them off early in the day. That trade binder stays in their backpack for the rest of the event, and, you know, they don't trade with anybody. So that's the only issue I see. And I think a lot of new people that, you know, like the whole shark mentality, and they think, oh man, I'm going to get these people that don't know their prices. I think they've made trading more difficult for the rest of us, but you know, trading does still happen. And, I don't think any more people getting in it can ruin it completely, but really there's enough money to be made in this game. Like even if you just supply the people at your local shop, you know, with the cards they want, you go to the event, you trade, you pick the stuff up for them, you come back home, you ship it, you keep the case full, you take orders, you do that sort of thing. You can carve out a nice little niche for yourself. You don't have to rip anybody off. You know, you don't have to make money by moving the entire price of one card for everybody. You're just basically performing services for people, you know, and, right. It doesn't matter how many people get into the finance game, because as long as there's even two or three people per shop, like, could still support it. I don't think there's ever going to be too many people in the finance game unless everybody stops playing.
Right.
Like, if it's at the point where people, like, no one's playing the game and everyone's just trying to value trade, then that would be one thing. But really, as long as people are going to want to play this game, because I really think that Magic is the best collectible card game there's ever been. As long as there are going to be people lining up to play it, anyone who can provide people with the cards they want, you know, you can't have too many people doing that.
Okay, so let's move on to our next email, which is a repeat email from Sander van der Zee. From I believe he was from the Netherlands, I think. Sent us an email last week we talked about. First thing, he says that to have a finger in the soup is to have an influence on something.
If by first thing you mean that was a postscript.
That, yes, but it's the first thing I want to address. Because,
I don't care. I've been using that idiom all week. It's been driving my wife insane.
Probably incorrectly.
Can you go get the mail? Sorry, I don't have a finger in the soup of getting the mail right now.
She just wanted you to put her finger in her soup. That's what it was.
Whoa.
Hey-o.
All right, so his email, he called us Hey Brainstorm Brew Crew. I don't know if we decided we like that name or not.
I thought the Brew Crew was the listeners.
We were supposed to get people to, you know, message us and, like, send ideas for names, but listeners... You guys are lazy as shit.
I made the mistake of pulling people on Reddit. That was my mistake.
All right. So what he has to say to us is he thanked us for talking last week about some of the 101, basically, the kind of intro stuff we talked about last week. So he says he went to a GP and went in with the mindset to trade. And basically he said that, like we were talking about, there were a lot of other grinders there, or possibly sharks trading, and he said it made it difficult to trade, difficult to, you know, kind of value trade there without just wasting time by sitting down with the wrong person.
Because what were they doing?
And I mean, it's a very real problem.
What was the same thing doing?
He just said that a lot of people who were just trying to ask people what they value cards at and just waiting for them to be wrong, basically, so they can pick them up. You know, basically just people trying to get out there and shark somebody else. Not really interested in trading for anything but that. So for someone like him who's trying to go and trade to kind of, he took a bunch of Innistrad lands and Restoration Angels, and he just wanted to trade standard stuff into, you know, other good value stuff that maybe isn't topped out on price right now like those are. But he said he had a difficult time because it was a lot of, just people there trying to shark everyone else. So his question to us is there a way to avoid this basically? Is there a way to spend your time trading and making money doing it while being ethical in the midst of all these people who maybe aren't being ethical?
Embrace it.
Damn. Win in Vegas, do as Vegas.
Embrace it. Like, here's the deal. Even if somebody is trying to get value, wait for you to undervalue, overvalue, whatever, you can do two things. You can say, hey, it looks like you're trying to get value, I'm trying to get value. We're going to be at cross purposes here. We can either walk away or we can stock trade. You know, we'll trade straight across, you know, for stuff I want, for stuff you want. You know, so you can either not trade with that person or trade with them. What I like to do is with those people, they know today's prices on everything. They know the prices very well. They're waiting for you to make a mistake. What those people aren't thinking about is what the stuff would be worth next week. So even if you trade a $5 card for a $5 card, if your $5 card is $4 next week and their $5 card is $6 next week, congrats. You made $2 off somebody that was just trying to value trade, you know, just trading straight across. So if you know what you want, you know what you're looking out, it doesn't matter what that person's goal is. You know, if they're just waiting for you to make a mistake, you know, you can look everything up. or you can say, you know, we both know the prices. They're this on this website. You can pick the website that you want to use for the prices and tell them, well, blah, blah, blah. It's this on Star City. It's this TCG Mid. It's this on eBay. Like, there are all kinds of ways to do that. If this person is just sort of, you know, like a shark, they've read three articles and they think they're going to do this for a living now. Like, they're not thinking two steps ahead. And if you just think two steps ahead, it's absolutely fine trading with those people. If they're rude, it's a pain. But if they're just, you know, overconfident,
yeah,
you can still get those people and not even get them. You can get what you want out of it. Because honestly, I'll just trade stuff across for stuff that sells for a dollar more on eBay. If I have a $5 card that's $4, or, you know, that's $3 on eBay, and I can trade it for a $5 card that's $4 on eBay, I made a dollar trading straight across with somebody who knew their prices.
Right. And that's a lot of what I do too, in that I trade standard stuff that I think is topped out on price for casual stuff that has a better ratio on the buy list, or cards that I think are underpriced because they're from the most recent, like Return to Ravnica, you know, stuff like that. I mean, that's a lot of what trading is. I mean, so there's that, and we understand that, and that's, you know, I guess when you're dealing with these people, how you can still make value. I mean, there is something to be said just for that's a very tiring ordeal if you're dealing with these people and then, you know, every trade. You know, so I definitely see how it turns people off. And the problem is there's not a ton you can do besides trade the right way and hope that these people, I mean, the good news is these people are out there just trying to shark people. It's not good for them either. If there's a bunch of them there, it's not good for them either. And they'll move on. They'll get bored and move on when they realize they're not getting rich off of it like they think they're going to. In my experience, those people kind of out themselves eventually. It's frustrating when you run into them.
If you think about it, like, if it really bothers you trying to trade with those people because they're out to screw you, if you're not trying to screw them, it shouldn't be a problem. If you're like, man, I was trying to get value off this guy, but he tried to get value off me and it didn't work out. If you're someone new, like, Sander is kind of new to this, you might not realize that you don't actually have to have somebody make a mistake and pounce on it to get value in a trade. If you're trading for something that's more on the buy list, something that's going to go up, something that sells more on eBay, something that someone's going to give you, you know, 95% of retail home cash for. I traded for Thought Seizes at 70, you know, when we were in Indianapolis. I did not care. That was absolutely like the highest they were anywhere. But I had them sold, pre-sold back home, so it didn't matter. If you're not out to screw somebody else, it shouldn't matter that they're trying to screw you as long as you know your prices and you don't make mistakes.
So for Magic 101, what if they don't know their prices? Are you saying
tell that person politely, like, look, it seems like you're trying to get value because I asked you what you were looking for and you said it didn't matter. I'm actually trying to do something similar. I think we're at cross purposes and it's probably not going to work out. You don't pull any cards out of anybody's binders. No time's wasted. You make a note of what that person looks like. You know, maybe that person can be useful to you. Like, you can say, hey, keep an eye out for Thought Seizes. I need them for back home. And you just part ways. Don't waste too much of your time.
Right. And that's the thing. Don't feel like you have to try. I mean, there's nothing wrong with just saying no. You know, that's one thing. The other thing is, I mean, if you're worried about not knowing your own prices, so you're scared to trade, there's nothing wrong with looking it up. I mean, it can be frustrating, especially for like someone like, you know, us, because if somebody doesn't know what a card's worth, I'll tell them honestly what the card's worth on whatever site, and it saves us the 2 minutes they spend looking it up on their phone. You know, but if you think somebody's out to get you, because those people do exist, then just take the time, look it up yourself, make them wait if you don't trust that person.
All right. I have three suggestions, which have not been mentioned. And this is how you beat the man at this game. Suggestion number one, know the cards that have just spiked in the last day, especially if you're going to an event. Like, there are a lot of times these people, they come prepared and they know their prices, but they know yesterday's prices. If a card just recently spiked and you see it in their binder, they're probably actually not going to know that just spiked. It's very common. Some people will be up to date on it. You're not going to catch everybody. And it's not something that happened a week ago. It's got to be something that literally happened in the last day or two at most. Because a lot of people come to the event, look up all the prices. That's why they're so spot on with whatever website they're using. Number two, speaking of websites, is use a really obscure website. If you know you're trading against a value trader, and they want to, you know, try and value you across, and you go, okay, you know, we'll just use the same website. Just think of something really random. I mean, something you would never use. What was the old one I used to use? It was like MTG Shark Tank or something. It was like a really random store that probably had three people ever visit it, but they had all the standard prices correct. But the other people just didn't know, you know, what in the world you were talking about. So you throw them off. And then the third thing is, like, treat these people with kindness. Like, don't just tell them, you know, oh, you know, I'm not willing to trade with you. Like, waste their time. Make people regret trying to value trade. And I'm not saying, like, I'm not saying that, you know, you have to drive everybody off, but the people who are really dicks about it, like, don't be a dick back to them, because then you just part ways and you're staring at the person with the stink eye all day. Like, kill them with kindness. Just be super nice about it, but at the same time, you know, just waste their time and be a pain in the ass. Even if you have to give them a dollar or two at the end of this trade, just to not seem like a complete douchebag yourself, like, it's worth it to see some people walk away frustrated.
I mean, I would reserve that for the most severe of cases, but...
Oh, I do. I'm not saying you should do this to everyone. These are the people who are just really problematic and shouldn't be on the trade floor. Yeah,
the kind of people that are rude and, you know, that are trying to make trouble for people. But sometimes someone's honest. They're just trying to get value. You're trying to get value. And you know what? A lot of those people have become my friends.
Oh, yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know, at these events. And you know what? They're like, hey, I need this. They're like, hey, you like Korean foils, right? Or, hey, you like German stuff. You just say, you bullshit with them. You have nice conversations. You know, sit next to them. People will come over and see you guys both have binders out. You don't have to burn everybody in this business. Sometimes you don't want to trade with somebody because you're both after the same thing, but like, you can still, you know, get each other's backs and that sort of thing. Look out for cards for each other's. You can make friends in this business. But Ryan's talking about the people that are just, you know.
Yeah, these are the people who, when I sit
rude
down.
And, yeah, they're, so, like, that are basically going to ruin it for the rest of us by, they're the kind of people that they're going to ruin someone's day and make them not want to trade with anybody by, you know.
They're the people that stereotype you guys and make you guys have to deal with
these are the guys that make us look bad. Right. And, I mean, for example, there was a guy, the reason I knew this, there was a guy at the SCG who I was trading with him. He had his cards in a binder and had them actually, like, priced. He had, like, you know, a dollar section, $2 section, $3 section. And it seemed like everything was, like, a little over what most retailers would be. You know, some of the stuff was right there, but there was definitely nothing under. And, you know, he started going through stuff. And he asked me, you know, what do you have on your Snapcasters? I was like, yo, you know, whatever they're at. He's like, it's, like, 15. And I just kind of stared at him, and I was like, you have yours in 25 here. He's like, oh, well, that must be a mistake. Yeah, I didn't want to trade those anyway. I was like, oh, okay, I see. And, like, just that guy, I think I wasted a solid 45 minutes of his time. I was very pleased. He walked away with the Boros Reckoner, and I walked away with, I don't know, something that wasn't a Boros Reckoner, but I didn't really care. It was value.
I mean, because you give him the card that's going down anyways, but, yeah.
but I mean, that's the point. Like, he wanted it. He got it off me at 20, thinking he did well, and me knowing that on eBay they were only selling for, like, 14. Right. So I was stoked to get rid of it.
Right. Okay, so let's move on. Let's move on then into what's it worth. And now that I can't use Boros Reckoner, because we just talked about how it's going down.
That would have been a really good one, Corbin. Who, Boros Reckoner?
What's it worth, guys? Anybody got anything?
This is my Corbin voice.
Man.
I got one locked and loaded. I'm going to stump this shit from you guys.
Let's hear it, Chase.
What is the cumulative price, both halves, of Big Furry Monster?
Ooh.
on Cool 20, Stuff Inc. Near mint.
$25.
$25 for both halves total. Okay, Corbin, what you got?
18 to 20.
18 to 20. Marcel, what you got?
Yeah, 25.
25? That's the same thing Ryan said.
$26.
Go with $24.99. $26.
No, I don't
you
do
think
that,
it's
Marcel.
More? Guys,
I'll go to
cumulative. Unglued.
All right, go 30.
Only printed once.
Yes, it was.
I'm pretty sure it's 15 and 10. Maybe that's the buy list.
I'm pretty sure it's 15 mana. It's 8 and 8.
Oh, boom.
8 and 8 retail. Cool Stuff Inc. If you think they're 15 buy lists, Ryan, you might want to buy Cool Stuff out right now.
No, I was saying the 10 and 15 may have been buy list numbers. I don't remember. I haven't touched one of those in a while. I just thought they were 25. I thought it was like...
They look cool in your binder.
I thought it was 10 and 15.
This is one of the coolest cards from Unhinged.
You guys are all way off.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be able to steer Marcel into going lower, but nope.
I said
above 25. 18. Nope. 16, guys. 8 and 8.
So this is 8 and 8, so Unhinged, so this is, what's the highest card?
No, this is Unglued. Unglued is from 1998?
Oh. I thought one half was better because you could erratic explosion it into play, or you could like...
No, you can't do anything with them without having both halves.
Can't you cascade into one and get the other one into play?
If you cast something for 16 mana with cascade, I'm not sure.
No, you cascade the other one. Oh, it doesn't have a mana.
They're not separate cards. You have to, like, I think the enable to, I don't know.
Man, there has to be, there was, For a while there, I'm pretty sure one, maybe I'm just going crazy, but I'm pretty sure one was more expensive than the other for that reason. But anyway, let's move on.
That sounds like a terrible
The other, like, why would you cascade into play? It doesn't have a power and toughness on the half with no mana.
You guys are talking about unglued cards and why you're cascading.
I like unglued. I'm sorry.
All right, I've got one. I
apologize anymore.
All right. Relic of Progenitus, the common from Shards of Alara.
Is this like
and
foil?
$4.
Regular
one? I'm going to say 99 cents.
5 cents.
$3.
What, Jason?
25 cents.
25 cents. Ryan says 99 cents. Marcel says $4.
No, yeah, I don't know. It's got to be more than that. You wouldn't be asking us. I'm going to say like $2.50.
Yeah, it's $3.
It is $3. It's $2.99. I bring this one up because it's been on the rise recently. It's, you know, heavily played in Modern, especially in Legacy as well. And it's a common from a recent set. So I'm sure we have listeners at home who have boxes of Shards of Alara that they can probably go through and pull these out. And, you know, they're $3, $1.50 on a buy list. So yep.
Get the foils too. The foils aren't that much more than the non-foil right now. And I think that will change.
Yeah. Yeah. The foils are just $5. It's not even double.
Well, they did those shards block foil right. packs and this was a common in there. So like, yeah, these are going to be everywhere, but still like, you know, I think you'd go after the foils because I think with the non-foils creeping up the way they have, the foils being not even 50, you know, not even twice as much, that seems incorrect.
I agree. And yeah, I mean, like I said, I didn't expect to stump you guys necessarily, but I did kind of want to bring it up to our listeners. So, something to keep in mind when you're going through old cards.
They're not 25 cents, guys.
All right. Mine's a random one. I don't know if this is really a Modern card or EH card. I don't know. Kuro, the Great Glass Spinner.
Oh, you looked this up because Ryan and I brewed this
awful, I know this one.
Awful deck on the phone last night.
I love this deck.
I should have been eBaying and I talked to Ryan on the phone for an hour and a half about this god-awful Modern deck that we're both probably build.
I can't wait to put it together. It involves Curse Catcher and Thalia and
Judges. Yeah, all the good goddamn ones. Familiar.
Oh, that is not
yes.
good.
I know, you're making everybody's head hurt.
It's got Kira and Aven Mind Sensor, and it hates bears. And
you know what, I actually, the only thing you said that... The only thing you said that made me not want to choke you to death over the phone was Kira and Sower of Temptation. I actually like that.
I do like those two guys.
So your bruises are bad. I got bruises.
You're playing Cavern of Souls, right?
My bruises are not bad. This bruise is absurd. Marcel, you build yours up. I'm going to build this up, and we're going to have brainstorm brew off.
I'm in the tournament room right now with my Master Biomancer.
Our list is 78 cards without lands.
I am cresting tournament practice room.
It's fine. We'll make it into a
conversation where it was like, yeah, you could add this. You could add this. We're talking about adding Venom Kit.
You're talking about four of every card.
No, anyway, one of them. We came up with like 100 cards.
All right, move on.
Kira the Great Glass Spinner. What's the price?
Kira's $20.
Kira is, I think I got a foil for 30-something not long ago for my Merfolk deck. I would say it's $18.
You realize that Kira's a spirit.
I do.
It's not a Merfolk, just saying.
How do you feel,
Marcel?
Right?
Isn't it a wizard?
It's not a wizard.
It's not a wizard.
Oh, sorry.
It's just a spirit. It's a legendary
idiot.
Creature.
You ugly idiot.
I think it doesn't look anything like a wizard. It looks like a... I don't know.
It's a bubble. Face. It's a bubble thing, right?
It looks like a...
There's a thing
like
inside of it. No, yeah, but anyway, you two, shut up, Corbin. Marcel, what's the price to cure a Great Glass Spinner?
I don't know. I know a Moto is like $3.50 to $4.
Yeah, I didn't ask you about Moto, Marcel.
I know.
All right. The price, because Corbin's a cheater, is
$18. I think. Yeah. You're asking me about Merfolk cards, Ryan. What do you expect?
That's
you,
true.
You to talk about a foil for 30 seconds and then come up with the real price somehow?
He was stalling. I heard typing.
$30.
He's like, yeah, I made this for my Merfolk deck.
I will promise
I think it's $17.99 and they have 7 in stock. That's just a guess.
I will promise 100% I did not cheat on that because I almost said 20. But
I should have played once, Corbin. Snap
I don't know. $2. Dollar cheaper? What is $3?
No, what'd you say? What'd you say first?
He said $1 cheaper.
I think he said $2 cheaper at first.
I could just picture Corbin with his hand over the screen. He's like, no. I don't know.
You asked me about Merfolk cards. I don't know what you expect.
Corbin, how much is Aether Vial?
There is no way you know the price of Cure, but you don't know the price of Aether Vial. You totally looked that up.
$18. I did not look it up. Aether Vial is $18. I looked that up after I said it. Come on.
We're having fun on the podcast.
Oh, indeed. Does anyone else have to choose their cards here?
I got
Marcel,
mine.
Right?
Yeah, I got mine. So this is a card that's hot in Modern and definitely hot on Moto, even though you guys don't care about Moto. But anyway.
Are you going to ask us the Moto price? Because that's always hilarious when we're $80.
Sure, yes. So what is the Moto price for Blood Moon? And what is the highest price you can buy Blood Moon in paper? Please tell me the difference.
I would say a paper price is like $3 maybe, and a Moto price is $8 because paper? It's probably like some underdrafted sets on there or whatever.
Paper Blood Moon.
Wait a second.
$3.
Did you say Blood Moon is $3? Corbin,
$3.
You're fired.
Yes. Am I fired?
Yeah.
Blood Moon is $10 all day long in real life.
I bet the dark ones are more than $10 because it's $10 for.
Oh, yeah. No, the dark ones are more. I'm saying like a Blood Moon is $10.
I want to say the dark is like $15.
Chronicles
is $10. I bet the dark is $15. So
I think it's, hold on.
If you're only off by 500%, Corbin.
I'm hard on this. Hey,
I think on Moto that they're probably like something astronomical, like 16 or something. Because they're only like, they would only be printed in 8th edition on Moto, unless they were printed some specialty stuff that I don't know about.
8th and 9th. 8th
and 9th. Yeah. And that was quite a while ago in Moto time, and if they haven't been reprinted, they're probably absurdly expensive.
That's true, because they're pretty ubiquitous on...
I'm betting they're close to 20.
That was my reasoning.
You guys know as much about the Moto game as I know about the paper game, so this is hilarious, but yeah. Blood Moon 8th edition is about $12. Where the dark and paper is about $12.50 on Star, cool stuff. So it's
12 ticks on Moto, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, 12 ticks on Moto.
Alright.
I wasn't that terribly far off. I mean, I knew it was going to be expensive. If it was a rare out of a newer set, it'd be like $1.
Right. Yeah, I
agree with Ryan's logic.
I'm not saying you guys are like terrible, I'm just saying like, as far as
your
evaluation is very far off.
That's right. At least we weren't 500% off.
They were educated guesses.
I think we learned something. You asked me about Merfolk cards, I name them perfectly. You asked me about anything else, and I just fail.
So that's why we talk about Merfolk every episode, ladies and gentlemen, so that Corbin can feel like he's part of the cast for 5 minutes.
These were $3 or $4 last time I had.
That's what we talked about for the hour and a half beforehand. It's like, what do you got for what's it worth? I don't know. How about the Abyss? No, Corbin won't know that. Give him one he can answer. Corbin's in the other room eating his ice cream. Hey, guys, you talk about me?
Corbin, I figured out a better word for pimp. Where was it?
Go on.
Well, procurer is a very good one.
Procure?
Yes, you are a procurer.
You're a procurer.
Or here's the best one. You can be a sidewalk hostess manager.
All right, Ryan. I'm glad. Thank God we had that input.
I'm going
to
solicit
Ryan
my
hour
pick.
To look up. Pimp in Urban Dictionary.
And no, actually, I looked these up. Very credible source, Yahoo Answers.
Oh yeah.
For someone actually asked, what is a more sophisticated word for pimp? Not me.
You know, I felt bad when I got Blood Moon wrong, but hearing you just say that made me feel better about myself.
That's fine.
You guys are both the worst.
I don't want to be the worst.
It's a two-way tie for last place. I'm sorry.
No.
You're only the worst if you're pandering your deck with foil.
Exactly. You can pander your deck.
You can solicit your deck in Vegas.
You can also whoremonger your deck.
Ryan just learned what a thesaurus is, I swear.
Ryan can't even spell thesaurus. He thought thesaurus was a dinosaur that lived in the Cretaceous period.
It was a dinosaur.
Can he spell Cretaceous?
What?
Oh my god. You can spell
Ryan, quick. Which of the three was a Cretaceous period?
The Cretaceous period?
Yes.
There was probably crustaceans in it. I don't know.
Corbin doesn't know either. Corbin triple majored in sports, broadcast journalism, and paleo Scientology.
No, I just
Cretaceous period is. It's
the last
one. Probably
the
one. It may be the sea monster one.
I know. I knew this in first grade. I completely forgot this now. Please tell us, Corbin.
I knew all 50 state capitals in first grade. It doesn't mean I could name 3 of them now.
Lansing.
Michigan City. Indiana City. New York City.
Oklahoma City would be right.
Kansas City.
See, that's why they made your capital Oklahoma City.
So you couldn't get it.
No, so the people from your state could remember what the capital of Oklahoma is.
Right, guys, the capital's going to be Tulsa from now on. Capital's Oklahoma City! Yeah, whatever. Let's just change it.
I actually just changed the name of whatever the city was named before to Oklahoma City.
Well, before it was named Indian Territory, so There you go.
Well, yeah, I would change that name too.
All right. Well, that's one way to wrap up the cast.
Be glad you don't have Kansas City in that kind of complex.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
It's two state capitals. It's the capital of both Missouri and Kansas.
Topeka is the capital of Kansas.
I don't want to hear it.
Right? Am I right?
I don't know.
I think it is actually Topeka.
Only people in Oklahoma care about Kansas.
Hey, so. Here's my impression of Corbin to get Topeka. That right. Topeka is the capital of Kansas.
Okay. This podcast is derailed. Please tune in next week, and we'll cut this down somehow, some way, and make it more cohesive, and maybe we might have a guest.
Well, my favorite part is that
it's not promised.
We have Master Biomancer Brew that somebody wanted to talk about, and the fact that we're not going to get to that has just made my night.
You know what? Let's talk about it right now. I got the most wonderful guest.
Good job.
I'm plugging my microphone.
It is going to be here. It's cool. We don't need Jason here. He didn't make the podcast anyway. Well, yeah,
this is a teaser. Leave you guessing. Leave you guessing about Master Biomancer Brew for next week.
Exactly. Leave you guessing about who Marcel's going to try to fire next week.
I think there may be a three-way tie at the moment.
We are all on thin ice, apparently. You learned your fucking moto prices or you're dead!
Thanks for listening.
I'm editing this.
Good night, everybody.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.